Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Métis Voices Radio Show, our own internet radio program at BBS Radio every Friday evening. Tonight, we start off the program by playing the Red River Jig by the Métis Toe Tapper. Our show begins at 7:55 p.m. Pacific Standard Time on Station 2. To listen, just click the listen arrow at the top. If that doesn't work, scroll down and choose whichever listen live button works for you. Each show features a variety of subjects and special guests coming to you live from the Machif Métis Museum in beautiful Raven Beach, just outside of Clearwater, British Columbia, Canada. Call-in lines will be open throughout the program. Here are the numbers to call. In the U.S. and Canada, toll-free 888-228-4494 and worldwide toll-free 877-489-6350. For direct lines, go to BBS Station 2 main page under the header Call In and Speak Live. And don't worry if you miss any of these call-in numbers. They are posted on the BBS Radio website, all stations, and repeated on the program. And now, introducing your host, Dale Haggerty.
Nancy, and welcome to our Friday, October 24th, Métis Voices Radio program. Tonight, I have the privilege of introducing to you my guest and good friend, veteran and Métis brother, Larry McElvry, Vice President of the MVABC, the Métis Veterans Association of British Columbia. Welcome to our show, Larry.
Well, thank you very much, Dale. Pleasure to be on it.
Yeah. So, first of all, I'd like to ask you, where were you born, Larry?
Well, I was born in Vancouver, St. Paul's Hospital, August 1950, my sister and I. I'm a fraternity twin.
Wow.
We were born in Vancouver, that's it. Born rusted, as I say.
There you go. Good place to be born in.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, where did you and your family live while you were growing up?
My mom and dad came out from Winnipeg there in 1948 after the war there, and they moved into Vancouver. And just after the war, the Central Mortgaging, they started a development of homes and that for the veterans. And Dad and Mom qualified because Dad being a veteran and there were three of us kids in there at the time. We had an older sister. And so we were entitled to get one of the BC box homes. Almost looked like a, matchbox type of home. And that's where we grew up, in South Vancouver. And lots of kids around, lots of activity. It was a good neighborhood to grow up into, a versatile bunch of kids that grew up in that area.
Good. Yeah, it's funny, that's what happened to after the war, I guess. And when I was born in Edmonton, Mom decided to move down to the West Coast, and it was pretty good. I don't think I ever regretted, I'm glad Mom moved to Vancouver because it was a life experience of, moving to the West Coast, for us, knowing. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, and also around that time, in the 50s and the 60s, Vancouver was a hell, a lot different city than it is now, We used to be able to bicycle right from South Vancouver and go into Stanley Park and bicycle all day around there, and then bicycle back up through Vancouver downtown and back home all the way down towards South Bend, which is really close to the Fraser River area. And It was a different lifestyle then, you know, and Vancouver was a good, safe city to grow up in, you know, for us kids at that time.
Yeah, I agree with you. You know, I remember, you know, when I was, I think we were living in east, way east around Hastings and Nanaimo and that area, and we used to walk downtown all the time, me as a kid, and you didn't feel like you were threatened or anything like this. It was very, it was a very safe time in my life that, you know, I actually sort of missed that. You know, I live up here in the interior now, which is, I feel the same way as I did when I was younger, but I sort of miss the way the city of Vancouver was like that, because I do love the city. I mean, it was, that was what it was all about, eh? You know, living in a big city, but it's scary now because I don't live up there down there anymore, and you know, so yeah, so.
I know what you mean there, because there's, it's like a, they have to almost hogtie me here to get me down into Vancouver now. I make up almost any reason not to go down there, but you know, I just, it's the traffic going in there and in and out, and the highways are now getting also crowded and everything like that. It's hard to move around as much as you were able to back in that days. And I live out here in Chilliwack, and it's just, you know, it's just almost turning into a bedroom community for Abbotsford now too. And so, yeah, you know, I really make up a lot of excuses of why I shouldn't have to go into Vancouver if I don't have to. But like I do, like I said, they hogtie me and they drag me down there sometimes. The family does, eh?
So you're living out there. There's a new Métis organization out there, isn't there?
Yeah,
are you
there,
part of that?
Yeah, I'm a director for the Chilliwack Métis Association of Chilliwack. We've been in existence for about 2 or 3 years now, more or less, and we're doing really good. Our president, Les Mitchell, and he gets everybody quite involved in all the community activities around here, and we're getting recognized out here. We're finding, you know, people really realizing that there's a, you know, a Métis population, and we're involved. So it's really actually coming along. The inroads that we've made in the last couple of years, it's been pretty good, especially some of the directors and Mr. Mitchell, what he's done here is for the schooling of the kids and everything like that. It's really, really progressed in a positive way.
Oh, well, that's good. Yeah, because I think I got a phone call from him, and he wanted us to come down, and you guys were going to have a festival or a rendezvous sort of type this year, and apparently they canceled it at the last minute there because of they didn't get the funding through the provincial council. I don't know what that was about, but
that seems to be the norm around here.
So listen, you enlisted into the Canadian Armed Forces in 1974. Can you tell us about your time in that time of your life?
Yeah, well, I was about 22, 23 years old when I got married there, and just a young man and everything like this. And the lifestyle that I was leading at the time would not have been very productive. And so I thought I might as well get into an organization where I could sort of teach me a little discipline. So I joined in 1974, a married man, and I was 24 years old. And you know that old commercial where they used to have on there for the Canadian Armed Forces, there's no life like it? Do you remember that?
Well, I remember.
And, well, I'll tell you, that's exactly what it was like. There's no life like it. It was an adventure, and it was a good time. And I mean, you have some scary, ugly times, but, hey, you know, most of the times they're pretty enjoyable. I did spend about 4 years, though, in CFP Shiloh there, and I worked for the German Army there, Tank Corps, and there were 17 of us engineers, field engineers, and we operated, like, various heavy equipment and did range maintenance for targets and things like that, and put out fires that some of their rounds would start the grass fires. And well, it was quite an experience. There were 17 of us engineers, and it almost felt like a Sergeant Bilko show sometimes out there. I'll tell you, it was a hoot. It was a good time.
I never joined the service. My mom, I guess, you know, through her growing up, she just didn't feel that she wanted us to go through that. And of course, my brother Alan, he was 17 when he joined the service, and he wasn't allowed to. You were supposed to be 18. And when you're 18, you're supposed to have permission, you know. Like, so what he did was he got my aunt to write the letter on behalf of my mom. My mom was so furious, I'll tell you. And then when he finally got out of the service, it finally caught up to him, because he was getting out of the service, and you know, he served his time in the Navy. He was in Halifax, and he did his stuff like this, and he was involved in the Cuban crisis at that time. And when he finally got out of the service, they finally noticed that his age, and he almost got a dishonorable discharge for joining so early. But they just shrugged it off and just said, you know. He asked why he did that. He says I needed to have my life changed, and this is one of the things that I thought about changing. It was the best thing for me to do, was to join the service and serve my country. And that convinced them. Then he says, okay, now you can leave. But my mom wouldn't allow me to join the service. So on the other hand, I joined another service. It was called the Apprenticeship Board, and I had to go to work. So, because by the time you had started your service work, I was already a first year apprentice in the glazing trade. So there you go. So,
well,
yeah, you mentioned in your bio that in 1989 and 90. That you went to the Golan Heights in Israel as a peacekeeper. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, that was a real interesting time. And luckily, when I went over there in 89 and 90, there wasn't that much of a conflict going on. You know, the odd little skirmish or a little incident, but nothing major was ever happening. But it was an interesting time, you know, especially from somebody from Canada, and you're going back to the Middle East, and it's like walking back 1,000 years. You know, it's nothing but history all around you. It was a wonderful feeling. You know, like some of the things that I was able to get to see, and the different people all around there. I got to meet people from Lebanon, Syria, Israel, from different religious backgrounds. So. And it was always interesting to talk to them and find out, you know, how they think. And they were always interested, especially when they found out you were from Canada and from, you know, from British Columbia. And they would ask you questions. Oh, do you know my cousin? You know, okay, things like that. But it was really interesting. I really got impressed with the amount of the people and how actually, you know, they can all seem to work together when there's times to work together. And as for the country, well, Israel is a beautiful country. The time I was there in part of the summer there, it was nothing but orchards all over the place, green and lush fields and beautiful fruit trees all over the place. And Tel Aviv, it looks like just like almost like any other big city, you know, crowded and busy, noisy, smoggy, things like that. But it was a good time. It was interesting. It was, there was a couple of moments, scary moments there, but there was besides that, it was actually a pretty neat trip. And so I got to come home during part of that tour for Christmas, so I never missed any time with the kids on for Christmas and New Year's. So I was home for a couple weeks on that. And then once that was up, I went back and finished my tour. Came back, and then when I came back from the Golan Heights, there was I was posted back to my old regiment, which was one combat engineer regiment, and retired from there in 1993. It was, I got out of what was called under the FRP. It was the Forces Reduction Plan. It gave all those that were close to retirement an early retirement, but you still get full benefit of your 20 years. So I got out a year earlier than I should have had to. So it was, you know, a good time. The people I met in the armed forces, you know, especially in the first 5-7 years of your military life, those friends you make, they're with you for the rest of your life. You know, it's just the comradeship that builds up within you within doing this and that. And you see that with a lot of our troopers that are going over to Afghanistan today and everything like that, that comradeship is still there and strong. Yeah. So,
you know, I had a friend, I don't know if you know him, he's an elder now, Bob Kelly. Do you know Bob Kelly?
I do know a Kelly, but I'm not sure if it's, no, doesn't ring a bell.
No, he lives in the Lower Mainland right now. He's he was with the was also a peacekeeper, but he was with I think he was strictly with just the peacekeeping, and he was over there and he was telling me about some of the spiders and scorpions that you had to deal with out there. Is that true?
Oh, well, yeah, it was customary every morning to grab your boots and bang them together and knock them upside down there, make sure there's no creeper crawlers that came in through your bed. My friend there that, you know, because we were sharing a room, there's two to a room there, and my friend there that was in the other side of the room goes, "Larry, Larry," and I turned on the light, and he says, "What's that on my head?" And I looked, and it was a big black spider sitting right on top of his forehead. So he says, "You know, get it off." So I said, "Okay, not a problem, you know." And so I went and got his bayonet, and that sort of bothered him a bit. So he didn't trust me at 3 o'clock in the morning with a bayonet in my hand and getting it off his forehead. So I went and got a book, and I just swatted it off, and we got it, you know, disposed of it outside.
Because it's not like here. I know we got some poisonous spiders here, but they can be pretty deadly there, eh?
Yeah, you know, but they do give you, like, the smaller the scorpion, the worse the bite. You know, the bigger the scorpion, the less the bite. So, you really, but, you know, they always seem to be in the dark or, you know, cool spot, you know, and so you got to watch where you're going in that. And we have, like, areas that we have to go into where it's in the ground and everything like that, and you got to really watch where you're going and what you're doing. Make sure you're aware of your surroundings. It's just the way it works. You got to learn to adapt to the environment you're in and keep an eye on what's going on. Keep those little nasty critters. Some of the ticks there's too. There seems to be lots of ticks out there, and guys were getting some of them in their head and that.
Yeah.
There's all these little cryptic craters going on.
Yeah, that's always one of the things that always bothered me was insects. But, you know, I guess I'm dealing with it now because in the city, you know, you don't get all kinds of stuff like that. Well, yeah, actually you do, but you don't notice it as much as you do when you're out in the country because, you know, you're always there. And there's always seems to be more here than there is in the city. Because there's less to distract you from what's there. So now that you've retired, 1993, what are you doing with your life?
Well, after I retired, life was actually pretty good for about a year or two. In 1995, I went back to school and finished my grade 12, and I took up the, got into something I really liked doing before, and that was fishing. So I was doing a lot of fishing, and plus I was making these wooden screen doors for log cabins and people's homes and things like that. That was going pretty good there for a year or two, and, you know, mind you, I was home all the time. And being a typical guy, I told the wife something that I shouldn't have, and that put her into a different mode of maybe I should be looking for employment. What I said to her was, after all these years, was, I think, dear, that you're loading the dishwasher wrong. So that didn't go over too big, so she told me that I should probably go seek employment and get out of the house. So I joined the Commissioners of BC, and that's where I've been ever since, doing security on federal establishments and things like that. Yeah. Yeah. That was good.
I'm laughing at you because that's one thing you got to be careful with wives. Don't talk about doing dishes. Because they don't like doing dishes, my friend.
No. I learned a lesson there. Yes, I. Okay, that was definitely not a good thing to say. So, yeah. You know, one of our male stupid moments or something. So, yeah, it didn't go over too good. So I went down. So, anyways, had to carry on with the story. I said, yes, dear. I said, that's a good idea. And I grabbed my fishing box and my rod, and I headed down to the Fraser River. So I went down there, and I loaded up the rod and cast it and everything like that and set it, and made sure the drag was off because that was always going on there. And there was about five other guys down on the beach, and they're all retirees, too, military retired guys. So I looked at this guy next to him, and I knew him, and I go, Bill. And he goes, good morning, Larry. I said, morning, Bill. I said, you got any work for me today? He says, no, I got no work for you today. He says, why would you be asking me that? I says, oh, I promised the wife I'd look for work today. Damn, if the whole, he liked that so much, it went right down the beach. So everybody asked everybody. So we could all carry on fishing without feeling guilt. We all looked for work. But in 96, I joined, like I said, in 96, I joined the Commissioners of BC and been with them ever since. They look after veterans. They deal, you know, it's basically a sister unit to the Armed Forces. That's how it was started in 1918 after the veterans came off the battlefields of the First World War and the Commissioners of Canada started. So they look after veterans and make sure that... you know, that we can get some of the work done, you know, and things like that.
So, well, that's good company. That's really good because, you know, it's difficult, you know, and I can give you a reason. My brother-in-law, he was a member of the American Armed Forces, and, of course, I remember when he grew up, you know, he went to Vietnam three times, but when he came back from Vietnam the first time and he came in, of course, my sister lived in Vancouver because they felt that they wanted to get away from the United States, so they moved to Vancouver. You know, and the poor bugger couldn't get a job. You know, like, you couldn't get him a job at all. You know, and after serving so much time, you know, through that battlefield, and he was in the Navy, and, you know, even though everybody says, well, the Navy never saw any service, you know, that wasn't the truth. He saw it all. He was there. He saw his friends being killed and everything. So he got so depressed that he had to rejoin the service again. And, of course, he just crossed the line. And guess what? They sent him back to Vietnam again. And he served another term there again. And, of course, he was one of the guys that works on the boat, so he was an engineer, I think, because he came out and he finally got a came back, and they decided to move back to Philadelphia, where he was after that. And then, of course, they were having trouble back there, and then he moved back to Vancouver again here, and again, he couldn't find himself a job. It's just like, that was a real tough time for veterans, I guess, in the Vietnam War. But and then he went back for the third time because he had no choice. And that by this time, my sister was living out in San Diego. And, man, I'll tell you, it was really tough for service guys because he came back. And, of course, that was the final straw. He, my sister and them, he was so badly war scarred, you know, like he was so damaged. The trauma was bad, and they didn't help him at all. It was really, really bad for service guys, for the especially the American servicemen. And you know, she got a divorce, and she moved to Vancouver. You know, and then finally he came back to Vancouver, and of course he visited his wife again, and they got married again, and you know, he just couldn't get himself a job here again, and so he decided that it was time to leave. So he finally got himself a job on the Great Lakes of Ontario there, the Great Lakes, and he was working on a big boat. And after all this time, they found out that he had Asian orange poisoning in him, and he died in a military hospital in Florida. Can you believe that, eh? So, you know, I'm glad that our Canadian services people have got some sort of a program for people that are coming out of the service, and, you know, because I don't know, you know, the American Army people, they sure didn't, or Navy or the service people out there, they sure didn't take care of their people very well. You know, I've heard lots of horror stories about servicemen that never got help that they needed. So there you go, my friend. So I'm glad you're still working for the commissioners then, eh?
Oh yeah, still with them, yeah. Yeah.
So you're also involved with the Métis Association of British Columbia. Give us some elaboration. I know you've been waiting for this question to come by, cuz I think you wanted to do some expressing of your opinions. So
I'll give you a quick brief on my involvement so far. I met Bob Ducharme about two and a half years ago, and he started me off there in the flag parties, helping him with the flag parties that are, you know, at some of our gatherings, AGMs and other gatherings and that. And then I became a regional 2 director there last year, and well, just before we signed an accord with MNBC, and it's just recently there now I've stepped up from as regional 2 director to the vice president. As you know, we're an association here of British Columbia for the veterans and that, and we do deal with Métis veterans and in the schoolings, and we're trying to pass on to the schoolings or the education of the Métis veterans and what the contributions they pay. Plus, we're also interested in looking after our veterans that are needing their care and things like that. But as a veteran, I do know what these veterans do need and everything like that. And what we're trying to do here is trying to get not just to the Métis veterans, but we're trying to do with also other veterans organizations, because it's just not the Métis veterans that have got an issue. It's all veterans that have got the issue, and all veterans have issues are almost all the same. So we're branching out from just not having any borders with BC to Ontario. We're right across from Vancouver Island to Newfoundland, and we're any of our Métis veteran units, we're interested in hearing from them, getting them associated with us, and getting them involved in some of our activities than they can that they can do across Canada. It binds us closer together. But and we had good plans, we had good intentions and everything like that coming up as our Veterans Association. And then when we signed an accord with MNBC, well, things have changed quite elaborate to one side. We were under the impression that when we signed this accord, do you mind if I talk about this?
Oh, no, not at all. You go ahead. I want to hear all about it.
Well, when we signed this accord with MNBC a couple years, a year or so back in Kelowna at the last, not this AGM, but the one back, when we signed an accord, we were all under the impression that we'd be looking after our own affairs and everything like this, plus our financial affairs and all veterans' affairs. We were going to sign this accord was that we were going to have an alliance with the governance of MNBC and with the governance of our Veterans Association. We would have shown support for each other and everything like that, but we would still have fingers off with each other's own charter of rights. We were going to proceed with this and everything like that, and everything went fine. Until one day I get a call from Bob Ducharme saying that our vice president and another director and a couple other guys, they all up and they left and they turned around and they formed their own committee and excluded us from it and excluded us from talks and excluded us from even trying to address these issues. And this is one of the biggest pieces I have right now is with what MNBC has done here. Has excluded us from having any talks or any involvement or getting down and talking to us and trying to resolve our issues. I think that their main way of doing things is the same way as the federal government does things. It will just ignore you and the problem will go away. Well, you know, I can understand the federal government treating us Métis that way because they've been doing that for us for the last 200 years. But I do not believe or understand why our own governance is doing it to our own people. I'm hoping that what we're going to be able to form sometime is in an open forum where we can bring this into light and where anybody can ask us all questions, maybe even re-vote on this to see if this is the way we should be doing this. We've got now two committees. There's that Métis Nations Veterans Committee, and then there's our Métis Veterans Association of BC. We're two different elements here.
And, now, listen, like when you say... Sorry, Larry. So when you say they... Who was the one that actually separated you? Was it the board of directors or was it the executive director? Who was the one that was in charge of all this stuff? And where was all this stuff coming from?
Yeah, you know, that's a really good question because we're kind of stumped on that too because we were kept out of the loop on a lot of this, and by the time we found out what was actually happening, it was too late. The damage was already done. So that's a good question. I'm for asking that myself. I would like to know that myself. I really don't. I don't know how this came to form. I don't know. All I did was get one call from our vice president at the time, and he asked me if who do I think that would look after our financial affairs better, the MNBC or our Veterans Association. And I told him right then and there that the Métis Veterans Association can look after our own funds better than the MNBC, because I said we were trained by the government to look after our own funds. I mean, we were taught by the best. That's what's looking after our country right now, and that's who taught us. So I believe that, and that was about what I said to him. And next thing I know, Walter and Art and a few other, and Ernie and a few and Stanley, they just got up and they formed their own committee. Bingo, took our cash, and that's it. And we've been in the process of trying to get this with the OFI and trying to get this meeting going up. And we tried to get a meeting going up with President Dumont and others, and to no avail. Their idea of resolving the issue is just ignoring us. So where we are right now, we live off of donations of other veterans and things like that, and wherever we can pick up our nickels and dimes. And so we're moving at a little slower pace than we would have liked to have been, but hey, that's life. What I'd like to see, though, is some sort of an open forum where we can this can be all discussed, and if it needs to be, then a general vote on this is the way it should be. But part of the difficulties that the veterans face today is that we're veterans, and what's unique about us is that not only did we put on a uniform and serve this country, and that's including the RCMP and the military, and put our lives on the line if necessary, and there are those that have had that happen to them. The one of the distinctions that we have is that we're veterans, and we're veterans today, we're veterans tomorrow, and when we pass on, we're still veterans. And I take a very dim view of people that are not veterans who think that they can tell another veteran what their issue is and how to solve it. And I think that is one of the biggest problems that we seem to have here, is strong interference on people that are thinking that they know what our issues are better than those that are involved in the issues. And I'd like to see that revamped a bit. I think that we have to have a strong voice. We have to be strong and united on things like this, And I'd like to see us, all the veterans of BCE and Alberta and everywhere right across, all coming together and forming this this big club, because there, I would imagine there's an awful lot of Métis veterans out there. And there are a lot of our lost soldiers because, like when I joined up, I couldn't put down that I was a Métis. So there's a lot of us that are running around that served this country, yet we have no recognition of were they Métis or not. And they're like our lost soldiers, and we'd like to get them in there. I seem to have gotten off the track a bit here on this.
I don't think you have. And, I'm going to ask you, are you a member of the Métis Nation in BC?
Yes, I am.
Yeah. You know, this is the stuff that I just happened to be at their last annual general meeting, but I didn't actually listen to any of them talking about their finances, but I just happened to be I was at school at the time on this Friday night that they were having this thing, and of course all the talks had already stopped, and I had just came there about 5:30, 6 o'clock, something like that, and then I met a few of my old friends there because even though I'm not with this organization anymore because of they won't have me involved because I seem to state my opinion, but I was approached by one of the presidents of the Kelowna president there, local, and he told me that, I told him, I says I had my personal views about, not joining the organization, and then, he started giving me a big sort of like a lecture saying, well, if you don't go there and make your complaints, nobody will know. And so my question is to you is, this is, I'm not saying that this is where this is, should have been aired out, but I believe if they'd done something wrong and you have a card that you were there, I couldn't get up on the podium because they won't recognize me because of stuff like this. Because if I did have a card, which I wouldn't have a card, but If I did, I would air the whole thing out and call this whole provincial council a sham, because they don't represent the real people. They just represent the boys' club, and I think that's what they've done to your veterans. They're going to take the veterans just for as much as they can get, and then just leave them out in the cold. And I believe that's the way they're trying to act, like the government did to the veterans when they first came back from the wars. You know what I'm saying? So, but my question is to you is, did you ever think about going and addressing these issues in front of the annual general meeting?
Yeah, actually, at this one there, I was going to do that because of something else that's happening within my life here. I was advised that would not be a good time to do that. So I can't really get involved in that, but I can't. But that doesn't mean that there shouldn't be able to be some sort of a forum where you can have a bring a discussion in. I mean, there's something obviously wrong when we're no longer invited to come to an AGM meeting because we have a little bit of a dispute. And I mean, they didn't invite us, or they didn't say, "Well, come on, we're going to try and talk this out in public forum." And so we can bring our side or anything. I mean, if the MNBC is so elaborate on this and they think that this is the greatest thing since sliced bread, then they should be proud of it. And if you're proud of it, then you want to announce it. You want to talk about it. Say, this is why we're right, and Larry McRaven and Bob Ducharme and all the others are all wrong. And bring it. It's because we're right and they're wrong. Okay, hey, bring it out. We'll all talk about it, and then we'll bring our pros and cons on there. But it would seem that you're right in one aspect of this government. And this is why you need an opposition party within our government, so that you can bring these issues there, so that they can open the doors instead of having the doors closed. When you do not have an opposition party within our own governance, then what do you have? It's not called democracy, but it starts with a D.
Yeah, so, dictatorship.
That's right.
Yeah.
Because you need if you're to have a fair, open government, you need an opposition to come in there so you those gripes and bitches, whatever you got, can be heard and addressed. Slamming the door on your face saying, "I don't want to address this," or "I don't want to hear this," does not resolve the issue. It still lingers, it still festers, and it just gets people mad. And that's not what we're supposed to do. We're supposed to be all Métis here. We're all supposed to be brothers and sisters and cousins and aunts and uncles and whatnot. Well, and we're one big family. Well, you can't say, "Well, I like that part of the family, but I don't like that other family. Oh, I like that that person, but I don't like that one over there." You know, that's not the way it works. Everybody's got to be on the even keel, every fair and square. Otherwise, it won't work. And if you don't have that, then you're going to get nothing but, like you said, you don't join, you don't get your card because you got a falling out. Well, yeah, you probably got a bona fide contention. I don't know the full story of why you did this deal, but I'm from speaking to you, I'm sure that you're a man of conviction. And so if you believe this is the right road that you should take, then you stand by that. And if you feel that this is the right road, then you're happy to say that, obviously, because you just did it over the air. Where's Mr. Dumont? Where's all these other guys that are saying, "Well, we're right in what we're doing"? I don't hear them. No, they don't say anything. They hide behind their curtains or wherever they hide and hope that the subject's going away. I do not have a lot of respect for skullduggery type of procedures like that. It should be an open, fair, due process. That's it. And we have a Charter of Rights, and that Charter of Rights is our Bible. And the procedures is only a means, and that procedures are okay as long as they do not conflict with the Charter of Rights. And then what Dumont and all the other people have done here for the Veterans Association is not giving us that due process. So And who do you bitch at? Who do you think? We've already gone through it there. I mean, you know, I'm not saying, I'm saying, I'm sure there's parts of the organization with MNBC that wouldn't mind taking this up, but you got to remember who's controlling the purse strings. Who controls the purse strings controls what's going to go on, right?
Yeah, I totally agree. This is one of the big issues that I've got to deal with. It's a club. It's not. And Bruce Dumont, he should know better. He's supposed to be our leader, and leader of what? When he doesn't even know what he's doing, because people have got opinions. You're going to keep them out. You know, give us a break. I agree. I think we need an opposition to these guys, and as far as I'm concerned, I'd be willing to join the other side to be just the voice of somebody else going, hey, listen, you guys ain't doing it right. You're not including me in your talks. You're not including the people. You're including people that, they're only interested in one thing, and that's either power or money. And that's the poor part about it is they go to these beautiful, elaborate hotels and spend thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars to have these annual general meetings. What about the people that really need that money? Like our elders and our veterans that, these are the people that need to have the money. And now, from what I've understood, rumors have gone down that they're $1 million in the hole. They're over $1 million in their overdraft. And, of course, what they're trying to do is they're trying to scrape and scrounge everything so they can get all the administrations, because they've been just silly-willying of the money. They go around and they were campaigning, they broke the Constitution by saying that when you have a general election, everybody's supposed to step down, and then when they find their new leader, then the new leader goes in there. But they didn't do this. Bruce Dumont was the president right to the end. That's against the Constitution. That's not fair. They were just saying, and then they were taking. They were saying that all the presidents can vote on this. What do you mean the presidents can vote on this? This is a membership thing that you got to take, not just the presidents and the vice presidents, the locals can vote on stuff like this. That's a constitutional thing that has to go to the board. That has to go to not just the board, it has to go to the people. That's a yearly thing that they can change. They can't put special resolutions halfway through the things. I think they've actually violated the Societies Act. And as far as anybody else is concerned, I think they're still under the Societies Act. Their constitution doesn't hold ground, and because they're still under the Society Act. So I don't know. I'm not very happy with them. And of course, this is why I'm doing this radio program. I want people to make their complaints against them and stuff, and maybe somebody will finally listen and realize that, these guys ain't the real guys that you really think they are. I mean, they kick out elected officials and everything like this. You know what I'm saying? So, I don't know. Well, I don't know, Larry.
Well, there is, as for a leader is the figurehead of our ship. And we follow by his examples of his conduct, his abilities, his ethics, his morals, his whole well-being. And if we got a good, strong leader, and he has those virtues, we can be a strong and a good people. But it's got to be an open door policy, and you just cannot pick whatever issues you want. Oh, I'll take this issue. I don't want that one. Oh, that one looks good. Oh, maybe not that one. Maybe that one next year. Maybe that one. And then that. And the way the voting process goes, you're right. You know, I mean, hell, Bruce never even took any vacation time during that election time. He kept on running the office. He kept on running the nation and everything like that. Well, you know, I just don't think that I'm not quite sure on how their process. You've got a set, double set of books here. You got what is the Bible, or which is our charter rights and everything like that, which is what I stem that we're going to be living off of, and that. And then you've got the MNBC's governance that says, well, yes, that's in play, but this is the way we do things. I mean, and it's right totally 360 degrees difference on where you are. And, you know, so you got the double standard going on all the time, and it's just not right. And maybe you're right. Maybe people have got to start standing up and being heard and voiced and saying, no, I don't like the way it is, and maybe we should stand up and say, hold on, let's have an open forum of what's going on here. Obviously, this AGM meeting that went through there, I watched that on the web, on the net there, and and there were some questions there, and you knew when a good question was answered, because right after that, Dumont would be right up there, give it his 2-minute cut-down speech on what this ever the person said. I saw that a couple times. So you knew that that person hit a note, and Mr. Dumont did not want to go any further than that. So when he doesn't want to bring up an argument and saying, well, hold on, I disagree with you on these grounds, he doesn't say that. He just slam dunks to you and says, no, that doesn't it, because this is the way we do things, and this is the way it is, and that's all, and forget it. Don't even come back to me on this attitude. Well, you know, that just doesn't work with a lot of people. Doesn't work with me. I put that uniform on for the freedom of right and expression, and I get a little perturbed when I see people abusing that right that people are giving up their lives for to protect. And then you got another sentence saying, oh yeah, veterans are the greatest thing since sliced bread, and they got nothing but good things to say, but we're not going to help you, we're not going to support you, and here's about 200 to 300 veterans here in BC, and you guys are left out in the cold now, and you know, hasta fiesta, baby, you know, because we really don't care. We got your money. We don't care what happens to you. Without that funding that the OFI was supposed to give us, we cannot carry on with our mandates, and we're coming to a slow halt. Bob Ducharme, who is, I'll tell you, I could put that guy on a pedestal, and it still wouldn't be high enough from my point of view. It's wearing him away, you know, because a lot of his friends that he thought were friends, they went and turned around, and they stabbed him literally in the back. You know, I mean, what kind of people would do that? Sure, you might have an issue. Sure, you might have a different opinion on how things should run. That's all right, and that's allowed. Express it. Talk about it. Say what's on your mind. See where you can compromise with each other. Learn to work together. That's what it's all about. And you're not going to be doing it when you got people saying, no, I don't like your idea, slam dunk, and that's it, and shut the door on you. No, it doesn't work that way. It should not work that way. That's why I believe that we need an opposition party in this governance, so they can bring these issues to them and force them to open the doors and bring them into form. That's it. If you don't, you know, if you, they don't want to do that, then what's the point of being a member to what? A member to the Métis Nation where you don't have a voice? What's the point? They want... And they got to start treating the people like people with respect and dignity and saying, okay, just talk about it. And that's what you're there. If you didn't want to talk about these issues, then you should not have taken the job, is the way I'm looking at it. You know? I don't know.
So my next question here is, the Métis veterans, what would you like to see in the future for the Métis people?
Well, for the Métis veterans, I'd like to see us becoming all one big family again. I would like to see us having some sort of alliance with MNBC where we can form what we wanted to form, and then we can start looking after our veterans and a little bit more than we are doing. And what was your second question? Oh, the future of the Métis people?
What would you like to see? What would you like to see happen in the future for this? And of course, you've just expressed on it.
I'm a new kid on the block, and more or less in this Métis Nation stuff. You know, like I spend a lot of my time in Vancouver, growing up with all sorts of people and different backgrounds, and I was in the military. So I mean, I really never got into this because at that time it was the Métis was, you're only a half or a quarter or an eighth or a 16th, whatever bloodline, right? So you didn't really get into it. So I'm technically a new kid on the block. And what I've seen, though, when I've been at the AGM, is the people themselves. And what I see is an awakening of our nation. I see an awakening of our Métis people of coming out of a flower type of a thing. We're blooming. We're just not no longer being docile and saying, okay, I exist and everything like that. We're coming together now. We're starting to form. We're starting to say, okay, hey, we got fiddle players, we got storytellers, we got healers, we got politicians, we got everybody from all walks of life all together here on this stuff. I do believe that we are a nation of people in Canada that one day are going to get highly recognized. You got to remember that we carry the one distinction that nobody else in Canada can carry. We classify ourselves as Canadian Métis. And everybody else is either you're Italian Canadian or you're German Canadian or whatever. I'm not trying to get into too bad of that, but we have that distinction that we can say we're Canadian Métis. And I do think that we're gonna open up one day, and they're gonna recognize who we are, that we carry a gene, the First Nations gene within us, and we carry a European gene within us. And I think that brings us a uniqueness of us as a people. I think there's good times coming up, but we have to work together, and we have to come together on this. So, if we come together and we work and we strive, we will get there. But it's not going to be an easy road, as it should never be an easy road. It should always be a road that has to be worked. That way, you appreciate a lot more.
Well, Larry, thank you very much for being our guest on Métis Radio, Voices Radio program. It's been a pleasure to have you visit with us. And we will be getting a hold of you later on in the future and to come back and talk more about this issue. So thank you very much.
Not a problem, Dill. I really appreciate you listening to me and asking me some questions, and I definitely wouldn't mind coming back on your show and expressing myself a little bit more. Thank you very much.
There you go. Thank you. Right. Well, I'd like to thank the listeners for tuning in and our directors and sponsors of the BBS radio station for allowing us to present this program to you each week. Please send feedback about our Métis Voices radio show located on the BBS radio homepage, and also be sure to visit the Métis Museum website at www.machifmetismuseum.org and our community website at http://machifmetismuseum.ning.com. Next week, Friday, October 31st, we'll have our special Halloween show. And we're going to have an open mic for any spooky, Métis spooky stories or legends that you might want to share with us. So please tune in next week, same time, starting at 7:55 Pacific Standard Time. Have a good week and take care. Until then, merci. Good night.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Métis Voices Radio Show.